Keith, how are we doing? It's a good show tonight. We've got a really big one.
We'd like to welcome Vinny Eastwood to the program. Welcome back, Vinny. It's been a while. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Well, I'm 6'4", so you're right about the show. It is a really big one.
How's things in New Zealand these days?
Oh, well, a lot of people ask me this because they think that the New Zealand's like remarkably different. You know, it's different in its own little ways, but you remember that conversation in Pulp Fiction where he goes, oh, they got the same stuff over there that they got over here. It's just a little different, you know. So you guys got fluoride, chemtrails, scumbaggery, corrupt government, you know, freedom's getting taken off you, militarization and corporate scumbaggery taking over more or less every single part of your lives, do you? Yeah? Yeah, I can relate to that.
All in a day's living.
Hey, you know, it's just the end of the world.
Yeah, it is. We are coming up to some pretty crazy times, social, politically, and I just hope we make it through it. China's, what you call China's stock market, our stock market, United Airlines, a lot of stuff going on. How are you doing, though, man? Everything going good?
Oh, man, it's going in... It's splurging out in all different directions. So I'm helping a number of people create websites. I've just been given a TV show space to film in, kind of for free, because the owner's a really good dude and he's one for the cause. And I'm going to do all the editing for myself, so they don't really have any cost input that isn't just there anyway. You know, just cameras that aren't being used, studio that isn't being used during their off times, which we can pre-arrange. So it's going to be called Paradigm. And the whole idea is, for the very first time ever, you can have a New Zealand television show that doesn't buy into the false left-right paradigm and indeed just talks about the real issues that are affecting our country and indeed the world without that smokescreen of BS.
So is this going to be actually on New Zealand television?
It's going to be on Sky Channel 89, Face TV. Haven't got a release date yet. I still have to figure out how to work these things up. I'm trying to raise money for a solid state drive, which will actually just make my computer exactly the right kind of grunt that it needs in order to edit this stuff like really quickly. If I've got the machinery that I need, oh my God, you should see me fly. I once did a 40-minute interview with two camera angles switching back and forth, and I edited that in 19 minutes.
That's amazing.
Including the publishing it.
And you're using a Mac-based system, correct?
Yeah. At the moment, anyway. But I think it's like I was writing a piece about this. In fact, I haven't yet published it. How it doesn't really matter what equipment you use as long as you get the work done. You know what I'm saying? So if you're publishing your archives every day, if you're putting up, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 gigabytes of video footage per day, I don't reckon anybody can criticize what system you're using or how much you paid for it, you know? But perhaps I'm wrong.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's awesome. And of course you have your YouTube channel still, correct?
Yeah, it got restored on November the 5th. You know, remember the 5th of November? It was like Vinny for Vendetta, bro. It was like 2 weeks till the New Zealand election. I got my entire YouTube channel pulled down because of this one video, John Key's Real Past Exposed in 6 minutes. All his Federal Reserve banking connections, all his derivative trade work history and stock market speculation, like the whole gamut of things that he's done, not including what he's done since being the Prime Minister. You know, just in 6 minutes, just put it in there. And it was such a nastily damning video that I guess a lot of people really didn't like it. So they reported the video, reported my channel. It got taken down because it could have been, what did YouTube say? Oh, well, it could have been spam, or it could have been pornography, or it could have been defamation, or it could have been something else, or like a misleading product. But it's none of those. And they go, well, you could send us an email to complain about it. And they go, oh, okay. So I send them an email and they go, well, you actually have to send us the email with an email address that isn't blocked. So sign in to your YouTube channel with your blocked email, which you can't do, and then use that blocked email to send us the complaint through. You know, it's like unbelievable. It's like 7 years work, 3,000 videos, more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, an institution that's been around in New Zealand for over 100 years. And I beat them in subscribers on YouTube by my effing self, and they take it from me. Can you imagine the kind of feeling of loss that goes with that kind of a punch? Just yeah. Because you expose the scumbaggery of the Prime Sinister to such an extraordinary degree?
And here's the thing. They can do that because they're the powers that be, or they have power to back their rules up. That is the messed up part.
I don't have evidence of any higher level involvement in the taking down of my YouTube channel. What I have evidence of is YouTube's rules being that you, the content creator, have to provide all the proof and all the evidence. So if somebody reports your YouTube video or YouTube channel, there is no investigation. There is an automatic, your video gets taken down. So I got two emails from YouTube, and the sequence is, first, that video has received a complaint, so it's been taken down. And the second was, that video has received multiple complaints, so your entire channel. And they said it's been taken down permanently, and there's no way to amend it or anything like that. But, you know, there was. And after I sent an initial complaint form to them, started a YouTube campaign, had support from people all over the truth movement, and even asked Mark Dice if he could give me a hand. But no. Basically, YouTube is YouTube, and you should be bloody grateful that you've even got the opportunity to use such a widely available platform. And I never put any swear words or any real nasty stuff on my YouTube channel specifically because of that reason. For if any time where I am going to get reviewed, there's nothing they can ping me on. And that turned out to be exactly the case. And my YouTube channel came back. Now I've got 20,000 instead of 16,000 subscribers, 21,000 in fact, and, still pretty much, numero uno in terms of news and YouTube in New Zealand. So. There you go.
Now, some might also say that you can get yourself taken off. Like, if you're a public figure, you have every right to have press and people covering you and following whatever you're doing, or whatever you do in the background. Now, in the UK, there's the right to be forgotten on the internet, and that actually comes up a lot with public figures. They have an entire... rooms full of people dedicated to looking over the internet, on YouTube, on different things, or media outlets where on the internet, saying or reporting these videos. So it's more or less paid trolls by the U.S. government or by the U.K.
We can assume that, but we can't really prove it, and that's the real problem with it. But if there's a pattern, on the other hand, if it didn't just happen to one person, if it happened to multiple people, then there's really something to stab at, and there actually is. During that highly contested election, one of the greatest blues guitarists in the country, Darren Watson, created a song called Planet Key about our Prime Minister John Key, the Federal Reserve banker, and so on and so forth. Got the country into like $98 billion in debt so far. He started us 8 years ago with $8 billion debt. You see? And that's not including the $112 billion in off-the-books derivatives debt that was reported in 2011 and not on since. Okay, so we're talking about a masterful debt machine man, and that's what we're talking about. So this guy Darren Watson creates a song about it, and it becomes real popular real freaking quick, just the same way as my John Key video was starting to take off. What happened after that was very interesting indeed. The election commission got involved on behalf of the Prime Minister and banned his song from being played because it was a political advertisement, when it actually clearly stipulates in electoral law that a political advertisement actually has to be promoting a particular party or be promoted by a party in order to have to be qualified and have the little legal, this was authorized by such and such, blah, 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 and in order to be a political advertisement. You know what I'm saying? So it was just a dude's song dissing the Prime Sinister, who's a scumbag. Okay? I don't care what party you vote for. Just don't vote for this clown. It's not even. It's hardly even a political advertisement at all, because nobody benefits from it. Only one guy doesn't benefit, for sure.
This is just a general question, but freedom of speech in New Zealand, is that should be the same. You should be free to write and sing what you want.
Absolutely. And the Electoral Commission later took it to court, because Darren was threatened with like $100,000 or $50,000 per offense if it was played on a radio station or played on a TV, and they would fine the television or radio station too, so it sent this chilling effect out. And then later on in court, Darren and everybody won because it was covered under frickin' free speech, obviously, from the get-go. But it was leading up to this contested election of this ridiculous scumbag. And so... that just seems a coincidence, right? But there's one more. Nikki Hager, one of the country's celebrated journalists, writes a book called Dirty Politics. And you guys in America will love this, because you know how the Republican Party started to do this kind of anti-politics sort of thing, right? Where they started dissing people instead of promoting policies. And they started starting catfights and making it about personality and that kind of thing. You've seen this kind of process start to roll into the election cycle these last 10, 15 years or so, really, really heavily. And it turns out that those exact same tactics were expressed in documents released by the Republican Party. Nikki Hager found this, and he also got leaked a whole lot of emails from the background National Party insiders. They're our equivalent to the Republican Party. John Key's their leader, obviously. And turns out that they're using the exact same tactics. So he wrote a book called Dirty Politics, exposed it all, including the fact that, you know how the media is kind of infiltrated, and you know how the some of those media people have connections with these political representatives, and they do their dirty business for them. Like, if a politician wants to say something, and they don't want to be seen saying it, but they still want to get it out there, you know, just to take a jab at somebody that they can't be seen, you know, being the one to take a jab, sort of like using a little shadow hand, you know, in the media to publish your dirty info, that kind of thing. Yeah. So for the Prime Minister and some of the National Party candidates, or cabinet rather, including the Police and Justice Minister, of all people, to be involved in this, secretly talking to and having, you know, leaked documents to prove this, the blogger who's really popular in New Zealand, like one of the very top most followed political blogs in the country, Cameron Slater, way a loyal blog. And to see that he's been actually being acting on the sly, doing the dirty and doing the dirty politics of these people, they didn't like it very much. And so Nikki Hager got raided. And police were in his house for, like, I think something like 10 hours. You know, 10 hours in front of his kids and family and the whole nine yards, pouring all over his stuff, taking his documents, taking his computers and all of that kind of stuff. You know, like, if you've met Nikki, he's a really, he just kind of looks like a really kind of like nice, sensitive dude. Like, you know how those good dudes kind of look, but they're sort of like, you know, they like to be alone writing a little bit. They haven't kind of got that that sort of, oh, I'm so charismatic about them. They're very humble, they're very reserved kind of thing. You know, and to see this dude going through something like that, you know, I just really feel for the guy. And so I started up this page to support him. Because it was funny, like, it was like me, Darren Watson, and Nikki Hager were like the three people that kind of like jabbed the biggest spears and the most popular little quips into the election from the alternative media perspective, and all three of us, not just one or two, you know, all three of us got taken out of the election race, as it were.
Coincidence? I think not.
Like I say, one is an isolated incident, two is possibly suspicious, three is a pattern.
There we go. Wanted to see if Keith was going to say anything. Sure.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I was looking at some messages I got on Skype. Three is a pattern, and it seems like whistleblowers are punished and criminals are rewarded. I have a question for you, Vinny. It seems to me, in my experience, a lot of people are waking up more so than ever. You know, I run into people and I'll ask them about the economy because that's an easy question that we all have in common, and see what they think about it. And next thing I know, they know that the Federal Reserve is a private central bank and we're being hosed. What's your experience?
Well, I don't know. I have different definitions to the term waking up because I take the analogy kind of literally. You know, what happens after you wake up in the morning? You get out of bed, don't you? You stop being comfortable. You stop trying to stay warm when you know that it's cold outside when you have to get out of bed anyway, right? So for me, waking up is not just realizing that there's a lie going on, but actually taking some steps to either expose it or put into practice parts of your life that no longer dance to that tune. That's what I define as a woken up person, because anybody can know that the Federal Reserve is private, but to expose its scumbaggery or to withdraw your money out of its banking system into a private cooperative bank, those kind of things, you know, any number of a million measures can be taken against the New World Order in every single day, and it can be as simple as smiling at somebody because the New World Order wants you to not care about each other. That kind of thing. Everybody's doing something because nobody can do everything.
Well, it is a collective effort, and that's what it's going to take. If some people think we all need to get together in a group and we all need to, you know, follow one thing, but I think it's a collective issue. I think if we just choose to throw off the yoke of this parasitic system, that's what it's going to take to change this. We see with Greece saying no to, their incredible debt. Any thoughts on that?
Any individual country that stands up against the bankers serves to be an inspiring example to other people, isn't it? And when you look at Iceland throwing off the bankers, pretty successful. When you look at now Greece throwing off the bank, it just takes the courage to throw off the bankers, because you can't just suddenly whip up a media campaign and say that Iceland is a rogue state. They've got WMDs.
You know it's true.
You know, it's like if they can't get you with debt, they get you with military. But some countries are just, they're just not a credible threat, bro. It doesn't matter how much propaganda you throw at it. People will just laugh at you. You know, those Icelandic rebels, they're threatening our freedom. Look at them flooding the airwaves with that Bjorkian mind control.
Have you ever interviewed John Perkins, Vinny?
Yeah. When I was interviewing him on air, he said, "Vinny, there's a lot of people who do what you do, but you're the best." And I was like, whoa, whoa.
That's high praise.
He also went through on to tell me after the show that he'd been on thousands of interviews. Thousands.
Yeah.
And up to this point, I was the one he enjoyed the most. Well, and that made me feel really, really humble. I was like, whoa, I've got a lot of responsibility with this ridiculously awesome talent I have all of a sudden.
Well,
ultimately, it's because whenever you're interviewing an economic hitman about countries being knocked over, it doesn't tend to be a very fun conversation, is it? You know, we killed that guy and annihilated this group of people over here and assassinated that leader that was trying to help them.
And the other one took the millions of dollars.
Yeah. So you don't walk away from the interview going, "Oh, that was refreshing." You know, I feel energized. I feel like I just really had a great day at the beach. I feel like I just went fishing with friends and just had a few brewskis. No, it's not like that. It's generally deadly serious. So when you're doing it with me, a little bit different because I don't take it very seriously. You know. So what if we're being enslaved by ruthless criminal sociopathic scum? Doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being slaves?
Well, I agree. I always say to people, keep a good heart. You know, this information can get you down. I think many of us, I know when I first started understanding just how deep it goes, that, you know, I was trying to shake people. Hey, wake up, man. This is your house is on fire kind of thing. But you got to keep a good heart and be positive, yet still being willing to really see what's happening in this crazy world.
Well, I think the definition, or at least my definition of faith, is having hope in a hopeless situation. Like, that's how strong your connection to your higher self, higher power, whatever it is that you hold above yourself that cannot be destroyed when your physical body gets taken down, that does not leave you when you're locked away in a cell. Whatever that is that you're holding on to, whether you're holding on to humanity, your family, your kids, you're holding on to Allah, or God, or the people's front of Judea, it doesn't matter what you're holding on to. Just hold on to something, because it stops you from going nuts and losing faith in yourself to a large degree. It gives you limitations when you don't have faith in something. And as evidence, I cite that POW casualty numbers in Vietnam era, they found that the people who were really devout Christian soldiers, you know, that from the US who got captured in Vietnamese prisoner of war camps, had a pretty high survival rate. You know, they eventually got out, they survived for ages. But the atheistic ones, very, very low survival rate.
You know? That's very interesting.
Because when you're locked away with no hope of rescue, alone,
under terrible conditions,
and you've got nothing outside of yourself to pray to or have faith in or feed you hope when there is none, your body will die. And it has a real physical effect on your body in stressful situations, having faith and having hope. So it doesn't, like I say, the very practice of having faith and hope in something, regardless of how irrational it is, can keep you alive in the darkest of times. And as far as I'm concerned, we currently live in some of the darkest of times.
You know, I always say I believe in God, but I don't believe in religion. And, you know, our connection to our higher selves, I absolutely agree with that. I do want to make an announcement. We're already getting people wanting to call in. We will open up the phones in the second hour. So 630, unless you want to take them now, Vinny, I honestly don't care, but
I do apologize. I was posting that in chat. It is up to you, Vinny.
Oh, man. So here's the interesting thing. You know when your girlfriend asks you a question, do I look fat in these? Do you give them the honest answer? And you go, well, you kind of look like a cow, sweetheart.
So, then I get punched. You know,
so you're either lying or you're being insulting or both. You know? No, I don't want to take the callers. I like just having us chatting here and asking questions and rapping and giving me a chance to feed my ego and speak over the airwaves and things of that nature, you know? It really is up to me, is it?
The normal format is we wait till the second hour. I'd like to give Thomas and I like to give our guests the first full hour, you know, to tell us about what they're doing. And
if we're taking callers in the second hour, and if you'll have me for a second hour, I'd love to take the callers then. That'd be awesome.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Because I only just did two hours straight radio by myself on the Vinny Eastwood show. So, you know, I'm feeling starved for airtime, bro. What can I say? I've got to, you know, inject that that airwave into my brain places.
You're just very popular.
Right on, bro. We've all been there. Right on.
Yeah. And I think, why am I popular? It was the other thing I was thinking about the other day, because narcissists think about ourselves a lot, right? And why am I so popular? I think it's because, number one, for the international audience, partially it's because of the accent, all right? Everybody loves a really nice accent. If somebody's speaking to me in Irish or British accents or Canadians, you know, and American accents, you know, I love that stuff. And it's almost like everybody has the desire to hear something of a different flavor. Wouldn't you agree? Something exotic? Something deeply sexual with a beard?
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit. I think it's just more that you're up positive energy. It's contagious.
Well, that's the other side of things. You know, there's all these elements that comprise the reasons why people listen to the show, right? And for some people, it's because it maintains their sanity, because their families don't listen to them. They think they're crazy. They feel really alone. There isn't really any truth of friends in their household and everything. And they're sick of the fear porn, and they just want to have kind of like a good time. They don't want to be lied to and be told really BS nonsense stories. They don't want to just be mindlessly entertained, but they want to be able to talk about reality and have a good time with it, so they can actually accept it, they can process it, they can release that tension, that pressure, that there's scum running your life, that you're a slave, and you can't just change it by flipping a switch. You will still be a slave until the slave masters are no longer in power. That kind of constant attrition on your soul can be really quite painful, especially if the only outlet and the only people who are talking about these things that you agree with are always talking about how these emergencies and how things are very urgent, and they're just keeping you on edge with all of the death weapons technology and the state surveillance and all of that kind of thing, but not having a good sense of humor about it. The end of the world is nothing to be laughed at, and it's the only reason you need to make jokes about it. Seriously, humor is the thing that will get you through the darkest of times. It's called gallows humor. If you anybody knows a surgeon or something like that, things are horrific in open heart surgeries. You're literally ripping people's rib cages apart. Just hearing the words and imagining the cracking sound as your rib cage is ripped open by shiny metal objects. Just the image in your head based upon those words can be pretty traumatic. Imagine having to do it for real, maybe even on a regular basis. Any idea what kind of trauma it is, you know, just seeing that stuff and doing it? These guys develop the most obscene and disgusting and horrific senses of humor, the likes of which even the devil would be ashamed. And there's two reasons for that. One, because statistically, surgeons are quite likely to be psychopaths. And number two, the people who aren't psychopaths need to be able to see some kind of light at the end of the tunnel when there is only a dismembered body in front of you.
Now, wait a minute, Vinny. Can you unpack that a little bit? Surgeons are most likely, I guess, because you're taking a knife to somebody and cutting them open. Is there actual studies that show this?
There was an article released called The Wisdom of the Psychopath, and they list a number of industries where psychopathic tendencies are not really having any emotional involvement or attachment to the human costs of their decision-making tend to be industries in which patients thrive. For instance, and they cite that being a surgeon is one of those. And here's the reason why being a psychopath is advantageous in that field, as far as these people are concerned. You have somebody come in who is screaming. It's a young girl or something like that. And you've got a young girl, and you suddenly almost kind of go into shock because you're seeing this girl with a dismembered arm. She's just come out from a bomb and a terrorism or something like that. And you've got to be able to make a decision like that. Save that little girl's life. You don't have the time for emotional reflex action. You can't process that kind of distress that is inherent when any person who feels something sees that kind of thing. You can be trained into this, of course, but it's so much easier, and there's no real learning curve if you don't really care about that little girl and you only care about the outcome of and the feather in your hat of getting advanced to the next level of surgical success by saying, ha-ha, I saved that little girl.
Well, also, that makes total sense, too, because not all your patients will survive. So
it helps if you don't care if they do.
Yeah, and it's not going to bleed over into the next surgery, that sense of loss or tragedy.
So, because they can then keep doing it, And in France, they recognize, like, when you're dealing with trauma patients or anything like that, and in a large part, that's why I take significant periods of time off every year, because a lot of the people that I'm interviewing have been very badly traumatized by the state, by diseases that have ravaged or are currently ravaging their bodies. And because I'm so empathic, it actually crawls onto me like a moldy fungus or something, you know, sort of grows on you. And every now and again, you start to realize, man, I'm burning out emotionally speaking. And you can, I think maybe I get about of a month. I can go for about a month as soon as I start feeling that sensation before I just really can't do it. And I have to stop before I have like a nervous or mental breakdown. And the French government noticed this when they were drafting legislation about annual leave and payments for people who were doing trauma counseling. And they can get up to between 3 and 6 months off per year, paid vacation, based upon the fact that they have to absorb a lot of incredibly traumatic things from their patients. And they can't do that if they're a psychopath. Okay, so it seems to be that a lot of counselors, not the ones who just give you drugs, are the people who are the best of us. And the best of us feel pain as much as anybody else.
Yeah, you're talking about genuine healers.
Well, there's an old story in South America. This of the story of the wounded healer. Sometimes wounds cut so deep that you can't even quantify or comprehend exactly how deep that wound goes, and it takes somebody who's been injured just as badly as you and has come out of it in order to help you up. That kind of mentality. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree.
Yeah, because sometimes go ahead.
I was going to go on a kind of an off topic. Have you ever done any past life regression on yourself?
No, but I regret everything that I've done in my past.
It's very interesting. I have done some looking at traumas from past lives, and it helps to, for me, I feel like I'm a little bit more in the present. I call it soul recovery. Anyway, a little bit of a side, but you're talking about wounds and traumas, and sometimes, you know, and how deep they go. Sometimes they go more than just this time around.
Well, you bury them under layers of denial, bargaining, and that kind of thing. And what was it? The five stages of grief was anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance. But most people don't achieve acceptance, you know, by and large. On average, or at least, or so psychology today says. The thing about it is, people are so used to being traumatized now that it becomes almost ubiquitous. If you go into a liquor store and you look around, how many different brands, how many different types, how many different brews, etc., can you find in like one of those big liquor stores? Man, thousands upon different types of liquor. You know, you become numb to it because it's freaking everywhere. Booze is just saturating the place. But you see, for example, a coffee shop in Amsterdam, and it's like a whole different stank of different ranges of marijuana and all of that kind of thing. So it kind of like stands out. It's like, wow, that's pretty different, isn't it? So trauma is so ubiquitous to us that we almost don't believe in recovery. It sounds like some kind of a mystical trick that doesn't exist, that can never be obtained. And so you don't try to get over your grief. You don't try to get over your trauma. You try to cope with it. You know, if you've got a bad back or something, you lift weights in order to make your spine stronger. No. I'll just avoid doing any exercise or hurting my back.
And take a pill. Yeah, and take a pill.
And so we've lost the fundamental drive, in my opinion, of what it really means to be human. And it wasn't our fault. The entire society has been constructed around us and been design before we were even born, and it was well in place by the time we even grew up to understand what was even going on. So we all kind of have these layers of psychoses, misconceptions about things, judgmentalism, ego, all sorts of things are wrong with everybody. And the worst day of your life is when you realize that, oh my God, it's not just everybody else that's got problems. It's me too. And it's not just a few things that are really messed up. Everything. There's something wrong with everybody. And there's something wrong with everything. That's a really terrible realization to come to, man. Very, very traumatic. I'm still dealing with it.
I was trying to figure out why I kept end up dating neurotic women. And then I came to the conclusion, well, I've got problems too. You know,
it's misery loves company.
Yeah, like attracts like and all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think this is why it's quite important to talk about these things, and specifically the venue of talk radio. It's kind of like it's still strong, but it's predominantly listened to by people that are of a slightly older generation. You know, basically beyond the age of 30 or whatever seems to be the predominant analytics as far as I've seen for the age groups that listen to my show and a lot of talk radio, because it's a deeper form of thought. You actually have to sit there and really listen. You can't be doing Facebook at the same time in order to understand what's being said on the radio. You can't really participate in chat rooms, I don't find, and be able to participate in radio and really, really sit there and really visualize and listen. Kind of, I found the best times I've been listening to talk radio is when I've just been sitting there with my eyes closed and really listening without any other distractions. And it kind of enriches the whole experience. And a lot of the older generation can still do that. Younger generation have been raised from birth with iPhone for every kid, a tablet for every other, and a million distractions and advertisements a day, with zero nutritional products ever being advertised or even passing their grasp, let alone decent entertainment that makes you think or decent media that tells you the truth. So it's no wonder that there's such a split between society, and it's no wonder why our truthers feel very rejected and actually start to hate the people who haven't woken up yet, you know, calling them sheeple or slave scum, which is what I prefer, as if you're somehow better than these people who are currently now as you once were, unawakened.
You know, I agree. I am so glad I'm not growing up today. You know, back when I was young, I read lots of books. I still do, of course. But, I mean, it seems like that's kind of a lost art. And I think part of the demographics of the older age group that listens to talk radio is as we get older, we start to really kind of look around at the world. Whereas when we're younger, we're much more focused on ourselves and our friends and partying and all that.
Yeah, it's kind of about that element of who's in your life, who do you get to think? Because you don't really get to start to seek out voluntarily who you want to learn off, what you want to discover, what you want to study when you're young, because you go from what your parents teach you to what the state teaches you in high school, and then what your boss teaches you, or you get the choice of what this establishment indoctrination institutions known as universities want to teach you. So you don't really have any boldly available opportunities available to you, and your ability to suss out opportunities where there are none gets suppressed by these various forms of choice management that go throughout your entire life, and it becomes almost like a random thing, like an asteroid crashes into another asteroid, and there's a chain reaction, and a whole bunch of other things start happening, and suddenly there's a meteor shower heading towards Earth, that kind of thing, sending shrapnel. out in different directions. You can probably trace it back to a number of different people in your life that have been fairly influential, who said to you at certain times in your life that you were receptive to. They said maybe 9/11 might have been a self-inflicted wound. They talked about the bankers, or they might have mentioned the word Rockefeller or Rothschild. And these little influences gradually accumulate, but the problem is, because mainstream society doesn't like those kind of terms being propagated so well out there, it reduces the likelihood that people will wake up. And that's why we truly must take upon ourselves as individuals. I don't care about the collective, because I can't control the collective, and the collective's interest aren't really my interests, because I would have to share everybody else's exact interest. I think we've got quite a few things in common, but I've got my own way of going about contributing to that common good. And my belief is that everybody has a unique way of contributing to the common good, if only they believed in themselves enough to abandon all the distracting things in their life in order to pursue that belief that they can be what they dream of being, that they can help people the way they want to, that they can fulfill their greater destiny on behalf of the human race.
Understand that. And I want to say we're coming up to the top of the hour, and we are going to continue this as well as take calls. So please stay tuned. But yeah, and I tend to think that society as a whole has a problem. We can't. You were talking about acceptance. Most people don't get to acceptance. I tend to believe it. Society as a whole does not get to acceptance.
I think part of it is being willing. I think most people aren't willing to take responsibility. In my worldview, I'm a co-creator of reality. I know it sounds pretty esoteric, but so I take responsibility for the world I'm in and choosing to be in it, which requires me to take action and try to make this a better place. I think many people are in denial and want to project, it's the New World Order, they're the bad guys. But in my view, there are no enemies. This really an opportunity for spiritual growth.
I totally disagree with that. I think good people have always had enemies throughout the entirety of history. It's called tyrannical psychopathic scum. You know, they've always been there. But the difference between then and now is we have the technology and we have the planetary interconnectedness to make the entire globe aware of it at once, that there has always been this great enemy, that it can easily be I will never ever, if you ever catch me saying the word easily again when it comes to solving the New World Order issues, anytime somebody else on radio says that, I'm like, we could easily stop the incredible criminal banking cartel that's been in control of the earth for like 6,000 years. If we just did this one thing, it was like, oh my God, you bro. It's just so ridiculous to me. I'm sorry. I'm just going off on a tangent. But yeah, we can take our world back from these people that have been in control of it so long, but only if we utilize the technology that's now available to us, only if we utilize the innate human potential that exists within each of us to make a difference in our own way, to not have to ask for somebody else to provide you with the solution. You intuitively know it's in there somewhere, because the New World Order is screwing you over in a million different ways just today alone. And if you push back against any one of those, then you're not doing nothing, all right? It is not incumbent on you to solve the entire world's problems, because you didn't cause them. But once you know some of the real sources of the world's problems, then it does become incumbent on you to not do nothing about it.
You know, I when I was 13 years old, I saw a couple of UFOs, clear structured craft that were close, not some distant light that performing, you know, maneuvers that you wouldn't think a terrestrial craft could do, but I mean up close and personal stuff. And that showed me at that young age that we were being lied to, you know, about the reality of this. And so then I questioned everything. So I was fortunate. 9/11 happened. I knew the instant I saw it on television that it was an inside job. So I think some people do have these kind of seminal experiences where their paradigm completely shifts in an instant.
Well, it's because it takes several decades of witnessing scumbaggery before you can realize scumbaggery when you see it.
We'll be right back, everybody. At the top of the hour, we will open the phone lines. 347-688-2902.
Evolution Radio.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Ground Control with Major Tom and Keith AZ here on freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio, nonetheless. Whether you're still on 101.3 in Central Kentucky or you just happen to be on the web, the World Wide Web, Freedom Slips welcomes you, and we thank you. We are 100% listener supported, which means we can't do this without you, the benefactors of the station. And we thank you for any help you can give us, whether it be $3, $2, $10, $20, whatever you feel comfortable donating. You've helped us out. In 1 week, we have completely reversed the situation. So thank you so much, guys. That's incredible. Without you, we can't do this. So thank you. We've got Vinny Eastwood here, and we're going to take your calls now in hour two. And Keith, you want to give out the number one more time?
Yeah, before I do that, let's go ahead, Vinny. Give us your website so everybody can find you.
All righty then. Well, everybody, we're all connected now by the World Wide Web, controlled by the great banking tarantula. And I love the way I put things, don't you?
Absolutely.
So go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood hasn't go ahead. Make my news. And that's where you can get a whole lot of the radio. Some of the videos are posted up there as well. We would love to get like a million subscribers on YouTube. But let's face it, when you're building a fan base from scratch, you don't expect to like suddenly jettison into like the stratosphere of fame and be given the power that does to help people who are really in need, who the media ignore, and things like that. So the way I look at followers, and the way indeed I have to look at followers and subscribers, is not people who follow me, but people who want to ensure that when somebody is in real pain, real trouble, and you can help, that I will be interviewing them on the show, and you'll hear about it. That kind of thing. It's an inherent sense of responsibility. So the YouTube is Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, or you can just search Vinny Eastwood or Vincent Eastwood. There's two channels that I run there. And also there's Guerrilla Media, so you can, not to be confused with the Guerrilla Media Network, so guerrillamedia.co.nz and realguerrillamedia.com. And I do a radio show live 4 nights a week on American Freedom Radio, which you can like on Facebook and listen live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And also thanks in particular to Eagle Eye, who's been organizing a lot of radio appearances for me on Revolution Radio. And, you know, Revolution Radio is really great, and the listener-supported aspect of it without the whole advertisers element is really just one of the better forms of talk radio available on the internet. And Hawk deserves, you know, much praise and prostration for his many blessings to us.
Prostration. He really is amazing to have created this format, commercial-free format. We really get long segments to discuss things. Anyway, the call-in number, I'd like callers to direct their questions to Vinny and his work and pertinent issues. The call-in number is 347 688 2902. And if you have me on Skype, and Wally, if you're still up and listening, we'll bring you right in as well. So the phone lines are open, my friends.
All right.
Excellent.
But in the meantime, while we wait for those callers to ask me questions, do you guys have any? I'll take that as a no.
Maybe no. was going to ask, did you, I'm curious about it, but did you take notice to the China stock market crash and the New York Stock Exchange technical glitch?
Did some brief overlooking at an article in the New Zealand Herald where New Zealand's afraid that it might affect us here. But you know, it's like, oh, what if it might affect us here? Like, are you kidding me? Like the second super economy in the world that is like basically bought up land and companies and provides the product for virtually everybody everywhere. They have a stock market crash. You think it might have an effect? Oh, it's just a possibility, is it? just played it down, you know. But economic crisis and this kind of thing, it's been getting played up all the time. But again, it's getting, you know, afraid. And there's things you should be really concerned about, but also be cognizant of the fact that this kind of news, bad news, particularly things that might happen, bad news down the track and everything, will force people to, well, cause some people rather to take preventative action. You know, we've heard a lot of times where people have like sold their homes or like moved to different countries or something like that because they've been listening to talk radio and they thought the US was going down and everything, and they found out that things aren't actually as bad or as quick to come down as people had been making it out or predicting it. Now, and in my opinion, playing up the whole element of crisis rather than playing up the element of preparedness is kind of irresponsible in a way, because the one thing that's not going to help you in a crisis is losing your head through fear. So if you're going to report things, just make sure you understand to give people some pretty simple advice. Don't lose your head. Sure, this is crazy stuff that might go down or whatever, but until it happens, you can't really react to it to a large degree. And unless you've got expert advice, and people, you know, specifically advising you, just taking a radio show host's word for it or a single news source's word for it and changing your life as a result, probably ill-advised, I'd say.
Yeah, some people are buying caves in Arkansas because they're afraid Planet X is going to come through and wreck everything.
You can buy caves now?
Yeah, no, well, you can buy land with caves. But yes, in mid to late September, brace yourselves, the end is nigh again.
Don't you get tired of the end of the effing world?
All the time! Every month it's the end of the world.
Well, so far they've been wrong.
Yeah, I think I missed it last time, man, because I'm still here.
I see a slow burn, not a sudden crash.
Yeah. I look at it this way as well. The New World Order's taken, what, a couple hundred years of exact meticulous planning, infiltration, research, financing, subterfuge, many different cell groups, advisory panels, and things of that nature in order to just bring the world to its current very advanced stage that their plan is at this point. And to think that they'd, you know, just abandon their working and winning formula of gently, gently does it, gently, gently screw them, gently, gently get them into debt, gently, gently enslave and erode their rights away into freaking nothingness. If they're going to abandon that and just like suddenly militarily try and take over everybody, I really don't see evidence or any success in that kind of logic, you know. And people bank up the credibility of the truth of resistance movement, and they say, well, we're having this massive effect, etc. It's like, we're not waking up people that quickly, bro. Not enough to you know, just suddenly nuke the world. You know, Alex Jones does an emergency broadcast. Oh my God, the New World Order is going to nuke the entire globe because of that broadcast. No.
Yeah, I do not see a nuclear war with Russia either. I think cooler heads will prevail.
See, it's Agenda 21.
Yeah, incrementalism.
I don't think nuclear war with Russia will happen. I think nuclear war with China may possibly slip if things... It's all a defense treaty that was signed way back when. If someone messes with someone else, we're going to get dragged. America is going to get dragged into it regardless, as well as three other countries. So
yeah, but they're taking under the assumption that the New World Order doesn't have its hooks in every single country and just plays them off against each other like little pawns on a chessboard, a Masonic checkered chessboard.
Yeah. I mean, it's all just show, you know, play, show and play in the end to keep people's minds locked in place so you don't start asking too many questions. It's a fear tactic, and it works.
Well, if you're going to destroy a country, why destroy its resources and kill its people, right? Why would you bomb them? Not when you can just economically take over the country and get all its resources for yourself and just leave the people to starve and fight amongst themselves, not knowing that you did it.
And they always have a bad guy to play up. You know,
it's always some Gaddafi or Hussein.
Osama bin Laden.
You see, it'll always be some last name that's like incomprehensible to an American audience, you know, until they elect a president called Obama just a year after they were really terrified about a guy called Osama. You know, can't make this stuff up. It's just these little jokes that are embedded in history, you know. They're just like a gold mine for people with a cynical sense of humor like me.
There are two weapons that I've always, like, I mean, if someone really wanted to wipe out the one country or another, you know, back and forth, there, it's not just so much that you throw different sized nuclear warheads or atom bombs at each other. There are ways to kill people without using while using nuclear materials, without using explosives. It's not so far fetched. There are ways to completely disable.
Yeah, they have neutron bombs, which disable only organic matter. You know, so it'd just be like fine. You know, you just walk into a city and it's just like got a bit of ash in it. You know, it'll be like I don't know. Yeah, it'd be quite simple like that. Or better yet. All the censored, unavailable technology that people aren't even aware of, like scalar pulse weaponry, where you can create a pulse and you can actually tailor it for specific types of biological communication. So, for example, you'll have this certain frequency or whatever that people who are, say, blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and they have a specific frequency range that their blood and DNA and their brain communicates at. And if you target that frequency range, all of the people within the effect area just suddenly flop around on the ground and die. And that's best-case scenario if you're 5 miles underground. At least these are some of the things that, you know, people who like Dr. Bill Deagle have been talking about. Don't even know whether or not that technology exists. But unless you're really deeply involved, we're all sitting on the sidelines and we're speculating and we're going from secondhand. And some of the people that I've spoken to firsthand that have actually been parts of these programs, they're often quite conservative about what these things can do. They're not, you know, freaking out or whatever, but they're also very concerned about potential uses, potential misuse, not that it's being used, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of murky water.
That's a good point. You're right. It is weird how normal they talk about or they convey something. And that's, you know, that's understandable when that's their job. But it's why are if everything's a play and show and tell and there's puppets and, you know, strings being pulled, why are these puppet corporations being told to make this stuff?
Because somebody will buy it and they can manufacture a war out of it later on. Either that or you just have these long protracted wars that generate several billion dollars a day in revenue, both in loans and weapon sales, like the war in Iraq. Hey, doesn't matter, a few thousand American boys commit suicide, more than they actually die on the front lines. Doesn't matter when they come home, they're so badly traumatized from kicking in innocent people's doors and pointing weapons at their kids that they just, you know, can't hack it anymore and go and live on the streets because nobody will hire them. And they don't want to go back.
They've also been exposed to all kinds of,
diseases and chemical contaminations and all of this kind of stuff. And the Veterans Administration just shrugs their shoulders and goes, you know.
Yeah, gives them some Prozac.
Yeah, it's all in your head, bro. It's all in your head. Here, have this. What's one of the side effects of this? Well, you could kill yourself and murder, suicide, or just murder. You could have some debilitating stomach cramps, bro. Maybe you could have some blood in your urine. You might turn into a werewolf. There's a lot of different side effects, bro. But you know, it's all good. It's all good. Just take it. You'll feel better. And if you kill yourself or somebody else, I'll just deny all knowledge. So can you just sign this piece of paper here, that says that you waive all rights to legally sue me. And you're like, no, I don't want to sign that. And you go, maybe we should lobby this Obama character about something called Obamacare or whatever that automatically exempts us from any responsibility for the things that we do that kill people. Hey, this sounds like a brilliant move, son.
You know, it's really true, though. Virtually all of the mass shootings we've had, they've been on some kind of prescription drug, which lists as its side effects homicidal or suicidal tendencies.
And the main binding agent in these things is fluoride compounds.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Fluoride heads, you know? What do you think everybody in the whole United States seem to be going crazy? There's videos coming out every second day about people like breaking through. Did you see that one about the lady breaking through the window of the McDonald's drive through trying to get chicken nuggets? Like going absolutely demonic. You do not want me to reveal my true form. You know, it's like this,
she said
this,
that.
Yeah. Who, she was like at power level 9000, bro. It was like totally out of control. She's throwing stuff through the window. Whoosh, rah, give me my chicken nuggets. People going absolutely ape over nothing, right? And I don't know if it's the drugs, the fluoride, the wireless radiation technology that's all around us, the poor diet, the nutrition, the nutritionless food. There's nothing right with anything with our culture these days. I mean, 50 years ago, nothing thing would be recognizable, would it?
I totally agree. We are stressed on so many different levels. It's ridiculous.
It's a cumulative effect, and that's why people don't see that there's a deliberate agenda, because it's coming at you from all sides. So you think that any kind of agenda has to be coming at you from one obvious front? No. It's everything. You've been born into it. You have suckled upon the New World Order as a child. You have grown up with it. You've laughed with it. You've played with it. It's taught you everything that you know.
And I think your point about nutrition is really important, too. Food has like a tenth of the, you know, vegetables and fruits and stuff has about a tenth of the nutritional value it had, I think, just 50 years ago or so.
If any at all, and I think there's something like 50 different minerals or something of that nature that you have to, but don't quote me on this, that are supposed to be in the soil in order for the plant to grow properly and actually display all the nutritional elements that plant can do. It needs a certain large amount of different compounds in order to achieve its full fruition for you to eat. And most fertilizers only supply about maybe five of those, the five essential ones that you can actually get it to, you know, grow up to a certain size and certain level of maturity before you harvest it. But it's got nothing of the goodness left in the soil. For the last 150 years, we have killed the world's soil, you know.
Yeah.
Dead, you know. And in New Zealand, there's this place. You know how they grow oranges in Florida, right? It's real famous for its oranges. Well, our area here is called Kerikeri oranges, real famous, right? And I remember talking to somebody quite a few years back who read an article that did a vitamin C test in the Kerikeri oranges, and it came back negative. No vitamin C in their oranges. The soil's that badly depleted that the thing that really defines a citrus fruit isn't even developing in these mature oranges that you're putting into juice or selling to people to eat. There's literally no nutritional value of that particular vein. There's other forms of nutrients and what have you, and obviously eating a piece of nutrient-deficient fruit is not as bad for you as eating a chocolate bar or something of that nature. But still, it means the things that you rely on to offset the unhealthy things that you put into your everyday life aren't reliable. And so everybody, even the people who think they're healthy, are still really sick.
I agree. I, you know, and it's the fact that we're buying foods that, you know, are horrible. Like, it's not just the fact, it's probably our American equivalent as well, but it's not just orange juice. It is also, you know, the meat that you're eating from the grocery store butcher, or, you know, the produce that probably gets sprayed with pesticides you don't want, you know, on your plant. But it's true.
Yeah, and the factory farming, it's insane what they're feeding cows and chickens. And, you know, if you go into that, it's interesting.
There was a good lady on a documentary. Oh, sorry, go ahead, bro.
I was just going to say, what pool, like, is that strain, the orange you were talking about, is that strain particularly, has it always been that way where it doesn't have any vitamin C nutritional value whatsoever, or did it over time naturally, did humans have an effect on that, I guess, strain of orange?
Well, it's just that they've been growing oranges in those parts of the country for a very, very long time and never properly fertilized the soil with all of the different minerals and things that you're supposed to in order to maintain healthy bug life and worms and things of that nature. And the plants suffer and they can't develop properly. It's basically, you've got nutrient deficient soil, you're going to have nutrient deficient plants that are going to grow nutrient deficient fruit.
And nutrient deficient people.
It's the circle of life.
Which is why we should be growing cannabis.
Every time he pronounces cannabis, I always think of the ancient Egyptian god of death, Anubis.
Anubis.
Yeah, who was not familiar with cannabis. In fact, you might want to say he was a bit of Anubis about it.
Some cannabis. It sounds like I'm trying to say it stealthily.
But cannabis, marijuana, pot, ganja, skunk, the good dank stuff, all right? The dank, in the dank, all right? It needs
tart,
to be
tart, stanky dank.
Okay, it used to grow on the side of the roads everywhere before it got prohibited. People thought it was an innocuous plant. And surprise, surprise, nothing's changed. It's still an innocuous plant. For goodness sake, I've been having mates tell me that they've had friends in the past that just on their way to work, they'll just stop off with like a whole bunch of different plants and just plant them on the side of the road. And then a couple of months later, nobody even notices, you know, because nobody's looking for it. You don't expect to be looking at walking down the side of the road and see a gargantuan cannabis plant.
That's a lucky find, but sometimes that is actually true. We in Alabama, United States, Alabama, I've found that on a property line next to a bridge on a road, and it's incredible. You're right; no one saw it for 5 months. I mean, people smelled it and said something, and only three people, and I was one of those three people, knew about that one plant on the side of the road. And,
It's because the majority of people are completely ignorant about the plant. They have no idea what it looks like. They don't recognize what it smells like. They don't know its many uses. They don't know the kind of climate that it grows in. They don't know anything about its properties, its origins, or anything. And I think probably one of the most far out things that I've learned about cannabis, sativa and indica is they have, unlike any plants on earth that I can think of, two distinct sexes. You can obviously tell the male plant, they're very skinny, and they don't have large amounts of buds on them. They have more flowers. And the female plants, they're growing up, and they've got fat, they've got big heads and things of that nature, and those heads are full of seeds. They're these little pods that form around the seeds, so that when they drop off and or pollinate and get around, all these other little plants will drop out. It's a constant reproduction cycle where there has to be males and females present, and it's a voracious plant because it breeds in pretty much any environment. It sucks out a lot of moisture from the ground because it gets almost like a 6-foot root span. If you let it, just a single plant can grow up to 8 feet tall, and they churn the soil up as a result. They actually turn the soil over, and they also deliver nitrogen back into it, which is one of the elements that normally gets depleted in soil. So, that's just like a couple of very basic elements about the interesting plant that it is. And if you want to get more information on that, I suggest you go to drugloed.com, LAWED, Lord, like a law, rather than a Lord, like a Colombian, druglord.com, and watch the documentary. Download it for $4.20. It is the most shockingly awesome cannabis documentary I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, now that's Arik Rice, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say the one, Green Rush, I think it's called. Green Rush is about the cultivation of cannabis and the procedures it goes through. And then you can also watch The Union, The Business of Getting High, for the laws and the strict bylaws and all the loopholes that every country faces, not just the United States.
Arik Rice actually gives a nod to that documentary, The Union, in Drug Lord. Yes. But what's interesting is that it's a unique perspective because it's from the whole New Zealand side of things. And what's interesting about New Zealand is that per capita, we arrest more people for cannabis than anywhere else in the world. We arrest a person every 30 minutes.
Yeah, you're referring to New Zealand, of course, right?
Yeah. We and it's per capita, right? It's 4 million people here, so arresting somebody every 30 minutes for pot's pretty prolific. Laws broken on average 200,000 times a day, and that's an extremely conservative estimate. There's other estimates that it's like several million times a day that the law is broken. And on top of that, we spend more money per capita than any other country in the world. So we get used as a test subject for a lot of international policies sometimes. So if you look at New Zealand, you can decode what's happening here. You can obviously see that the same sort of plans start getting concocted elsewhere, or at least similar symptoms are already occurring elsewhere. And it's just such a really good documentary. He's a really good dude, a good friend of mine, and I just wish more people would interview them on their radio shows, bring them on and help to give him some promo for this, because he put like 5 years, 40 grand or something of his own money into it. He's like been he's been living in like tents a lot of times, just with his camera and stuff, just really living it rough and pulling off a documentary of such masterful storytelling is just it's just so compelling to me that I feel the need to promote it.
I mean, depending on how deep you want to go into that world, it can be pretty dangerous, especially when you're having to film people and faces. and their occupation, what they're doing, it can be pretty darn dangerous.
Well, people always go on about how dangerous something is before they've actually even done it. And a lot of the time we convince ourselves that it's so dangerous that we're not even going to try, when if we did try, we'd realize there was no danger at all.
Don't let fear get in your way. Angela Black actually had Arik on, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Arik Rice, is that correct, Vinny?
Yep.
Yeah, and
it actually took him going on Angela Black's show. I've known Arik for years. I've had him on my show twice, and it was the first time ever. Like, I finally clicked. Like, oh, that's how to say his name without messing it up.
By the way,
I'm so ashamed of it.
I'm sorry. We've been joined by Heather Holman. Heather, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Did you have Did you have a question for Vinny, Heather?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, hey, Vinny, what's up? I haven't talked to him. He sent me a birthday wish a while ago, and I wanted to thank him for that and to let him know that he's doing a great job. And I put a couple links in chat of good things about cannabis, like some court decisions have made more leniencies for cannabis, you know, and marijuana. So that's a good thing.
Quite a long list of things, and it's like, I want to put down some good things about cannabis. You know, be a real effing short list. Bad things about it.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's expensive.
Oh, well.
There's just not enough weed, man. I wish it was free. I wish I could grow like 8 plants right out in my garden, man. I barely even need to tend them. They just grow by themselves. I come out and I say, oh, aren't you growing nice and pretty? You're going to get some nice big buds for daddy, aren't you? Yes. When harvest time comes, I'm going to kill you and then incinerate you very, very slowly when you're wrapped up in the papers, you little dear beauty. You. Oh, I love your smell. I'm not washing this hand again.
I actually grew some legally here in Arizona as a caregiver for an elderly patient who was also a dear friend of mine who has since passed away. But I'll tell you, 3 weeks after my permit or license, whatever, expired, you know, and I'd torn everything down because I wasn't going to put myself at risk, helicopter flew right, I mean, I'm talking 40, 30 feet right over, I'm sure with infrared scanning technology, and it's just amazing to me. But it's very interesting to grow it and actually do it legally. There's all kinds of restrictions. I had to grow it indoors. I really wish I could do it outdoors because they like the sun so much.
Yeah, and it grows in pretty much any climate. Man, they grow it up in the Himalayas. They grow it in the Ganges River. Why do you think the Ganges River is called the Ganges River? Because it's got ganja, bro.
I never made that connection.
Yeah, that's the Ganga River, where all the ganja grows, and it's just a ubiquitous plant. It's all over the world. Even seen some kind of ancient maps and things like that that are made out of it, that are like from eras where it was thought that there weren't any trade routes or connections between the continents or anything like that. It's just like it's this thing that's here to save us to a large degree. It's like, you want anything, here's the plant, bro, go for your life, son, everything's in it.
Yeah, and it's tremendously threatening to the corporocracy because it can be used in so many ways.
I want you to remind people why they need us.
You know, I heard a story that they actually found resin on 6,000-year-old pottery in China. And they believe they burned it in there for the psychotropic effect.
Oh, they even found, like, a Chinese burial chamber where next to the body was buried cannabis in a small bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3,000-year-old ganja.
I read about that. That's not the only place it's been found in an archaeological site, you'll find out. Do some research, and it's completely littered throughout history, man.
Now, I'm going to go say something really offensive here. Cannabis throughout time has been more recognizable and more worshipped than Jesus.
I don't think that's that controversial to our audience here.
No, I think it always is.
It always is. Whenever you question anybody's deeply held belief systems, that if your God created this earth, surely they created cannabis on purpose, right? And what do you think? God just made a mistake. It's like, oh man, I really messed that one up. Now I have to create Nixon.
Oh man, I threw a bunch of weeds down on planet. What am I gonna do?
You know, I watched a when I was growing this, you know, for my patient, watched a very interesting video of a doctor in San Francisco who had a patient who he had prescribed juicing it. You know, what he said was that if you don't heat it, you don't get any psychotropic effects. And she was tremendously sick and got completely well by just juicing the cannabis.
Yeah. Absolutely, and it's a common practice, and juicing almost anything is a really good idea, apart from not necessarily fruit juice so much. The reason why fruit is the way it is that sugar's a poison, right? Make no ifs, buts, or maybes about it. It's a poison, but it's a poison that's addictive that you crave, and so fruit has it on this, so that animals like birds, etc., will come and eat it, and then eat the seeds out of it, and then they will go and they will spread it. You know, it's an evolutionary thing. But the reason why the bird doesn't get sick, and the reason why it doesn't really gain weight and get too fat to fly, is because the sugar within the fruit is compacted with all this fibrous stuff, which actually allows the organs of the organism eating it to digest it without having the poison in it. So it's about juicing your vegetables, but eating your fruit, apparently, or so I've heard.
Yeah, juicing is fantastic. I've got a juicer. I need to pull it out and actually use it. I used to be bored. They're so hard to clean is the biggest problem, but you can put just about any kind of veggies in a juicer and it's delicious.
It does actually taste real good, and that's the interesting thing, but it's always the effort, because we're used to the sedentary lifestyle where we're sitting down looking at a screen or like in fast food or whatever, that actually making through the effort of even cooking dinner is too much for some people. And then, oh, I also have to chop up all this fruit and vegetables and everything and pour it into a juicer, which is a wench to clean. My goodness, this is just too much responsibility. I'd rather just sit down here, have a brewski, and fight the New World Order. That's enough responsibility for me.
Keyboard warrior.
Well, see, never underestimate the power of the keyboard warriors, because without them, there wouldn't be much of an audience. And it's through these people that are actually contributing in this very easily accessible way of posting things out on social media. It's the reason for the primary growth in the truth movement and the shift of investment in the economy into the truth movement. And you'll see that Revolution Radio is becoming a more better finance because of keyboard warriors. Every war has a couple of fronts, maybe, but at the very least, there's the people on the front line that do the fighting, take the fight to the enemy, and then there are people on the back line who maintain the camps, who patch up the wounded ones, who make sure that there's a supply line so that the troops at the front don't starve, who make sure that they've got warm clothing or even hot showers or something like this. Because people underestimate that those people in the back line, without them, the people at the front line would all die within a week. And the people at the front line sometimes forget that. And so it's incumbent on everybody to just kind of remember that you're playing a part here. And don't let anybody say that their part is better than you or like you're not doing enough or whatever. Those people generally aren't doing bugger all anyway. F them.
Yeah, I'm just going to hold out a big fat little finger to you. You go away. You're not doing anything, and all you're doing is sitting back and criticizing people who are doing something. Shush! Practice what you preach, or shush!
I will bet that a sizable portion of our audience no longer watches television. I know I'm one of them. And it's because of the internet. There's just so much content on there, and it actually uses your mind so much more.
Well, it depends on what you're watching, because my wife, for example, we don't have the TV anymore. We're like, oh, we don't like that. So what she does is she just watches TV shows online.
Yes, that's possible.
It's like you've missed the disconnect, man. But then there's sometimes I'll be walking through and she'll be watching a TV show or something. I'll just walk behind her, go to the kitchen. Masonic flop, you know, always the TV symbols. You'll notice that there's often all-seeing eyes or black and white checkered floors and like TV shows and everything. Once you're aware of them, you start to notice that they're in virtually every single one. And so my wife hates it when I walk past and she's watching some Disney program and I just going past Masonic floor.
have you ever interviewed Freeman Fly?
Yeah, several times.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow. He's done a lot of work on that.
Yeah, and I think there's also that interesting element of people who are like scared of the occult, scared of occult knowledge, and it's just like because they didn't even understand the meaning of the word, dude. It means hidden knowledge. Okay. It doesn't mean evil practice. It doesn't mean I'm going to eat babies because I learned about Aleister Crowley doing it. It is a study of hidden knowledge. There's a whole lot of different aspects to the occult that people don't recognize. And I think Frater X has done a lot to really explain the sort of types of people that you get into the occult circles. Certain people are into numerology. Certain people are into what's that? It's not geography.
Architecture. But
it's shapes and stuff. Shoot.
Geomancy? I don't know.
I'm not sure if it's algebra.
Trigonometry or geometry.
I can't forget, but it is to do with all of those things or whatever the structure of how things work. And other people are in it because they actually want power for themselves. They call the political masons, and some of them are what they call porch masons, who are simply there to get away from their wives. And other ones are just kind of hereditary masons who are just there because their dad was one and they've always had one in the family and that kind of thing. So a large proportion of Freemasonry, which is a huge secret society, about a million members worldwide, a large proportion of them have no idea that there's anything nefarious going on because most of them aren't actually in a secret society to learn about occult knowledge, secreted knowledge. And occasionally you get somebody like Frater X or James Wright going into those organizations, finding out what it's about because they're really bright, clued on, and they use their access now through secret societies or did at the time to glean information, to have access to libraries nobody's been allowed in a long time, to read these old tomes and books that you actually had to blow the dust off of them, that kind of thing. Some of the ancient ferreted away kind of sort of deep historical stuff that's been kept in these libraries of various Masonic lodges around America, and bringing that knowledge to the forefront is a pretty risky endeavor, and a lot of people have had a lot of consequences for doing that kind of thing, both historically and currently. But again, stress the point, it's not all Masons that are bad. I know plenty of Masons. In fact, I think about half a dozen, you know, good mates of mine are Masons, and they're the good kind of people.
Yeah, they do a lot of altruistic work, you know, hospitals and stuff like that. I agree with you. It's only at the very top that
Well, the thing is, actually, those things are all a front. I'm talking about the individuals themselves, because when I criticize Freemasonry, I criticize the institution of Freemasonry, not individual Freemasons, because it's all up to the individual about who you are, what you do. Are you contributing to some kind of scumbaggery? Are you covering up for it knowingly? Because so many of us participate in things unknowingly. One person, I was smoking cigarettes, I think, at the time, and a friend of mine says to me, "Hey, you're supporting Big Tobacco." And I go, "Oh, okay. How did you get to the party? By chance, did you drive here?" "Yeah." "And did you by chance fill that car up with petrol or some kind of propelling fluid that was provided by Big Oil?" "Yeah." "Well, you're supporting Big Oil." So it was like, supporting elements that are actually now necessary for survival is something bad. I think that's why everybody's so stressed, because you know that you're participating in some kind of evil and you don't know what exact alternative you can turn to replace it right here. It's like the product isn't available. It's not like put into your hands. It's not advertised on TV. You have to actually go out and put some effort in. You have to search for it. You have to listen to a whole bunch of different sources in order to figure out who the F you are anymore.
You know, it's my opinion that over-unity energy technology is going to break at some point. In other words, replacing, you know, we'll get off the grid and all that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Vinny?
I don't think there is such a thing as off the grid when there's a global control grid.
No, I'm just talking about the electricity grid.
Oh, the electricity grid. Well, I spoke to Gio Griffin about that this one time, and one thing he's particularly concerned about is all the Transformers, the Decepticons in particular. I'm just talking. I'm joking.
Oh my God, I thought you were serious.
No, but all of the Transformers that provide us with our power through the electricity grid are actually all custom built. They don't have just replacement ones like lying around. And about 150 years ago or so, there was a solar EMP burst which wiped out the electrical grid at the time, which wasn't really that huge of a deal because it was merely just telegraph poles or something that needed to be rewired, repowered, and they recovered relatively quickly after. But today we're so dependent on electricity that if one of those things were to go off, you would have probably 90% of the population die within a month. That's how dependent we are on electricity. And there are no replacements for those transformers if they all go down in the thing. It'll take a long, long time to get pieces of the grid back up and running. And in the meantime, people have been relying on electricity to keep them warm or petrol or whatever to get from A to B. Suddenly, and you'll notice this in a massive power cut, there's nothing to do, is there? You think, oh, well, we'll go make a cup of tea. You need electricity to make a cup of tea. Oh, I might watch a DVD. You need electricity to watch a DVD. Oh, we might cook some dinner. You need some electricity to cook some dinner.
And to pump gas for the trucks to bring food to the grocery stores.
So in one fell swoop, 90% of the population gets eliminated just by a sheer act of nature. You know, chaos in the streets. And that's kind of something you could sit back and worry really about, and once it happens, whew, you know, you're going to be glad you're living off the grid. But I think there's also the other element in terms of trying to get off the grid. You can only deal with what's right in front of you, and so it is now possible to build Earthships, to have solar electricity. There's even other people who are pioneering other forms of, you know, sort of censored a little bit off the wall technology that does work and happens. The Keshe Institute, I think, is a good one to Google. So you can get off the grid in the technical sense of the word. However, the question is not whether or not you can get off the grid and get off the grid comfortably. That's absolutely possible. Internet's still available out in things. You know, you can have a phone line brought in. So that's ultimately your connection to the outside world, and you can do composting toilets. You can have an entire ecosystem working for your house. A friend of mine, Brenton, he's been working with the Eco House New Zealand, or I forget exactly the name, but they make Earthships. Earthship New Zealand, I think, is it. And it's a good idea, really. My only concern is that you can't get super fast broadband out there, which is what I absolutely require for my job. So that kind of – I can't do it myself personally. I mean, maybe if I didn't have any kind of media-heavy responsibilities that I need extremely fast internet at home – I would totally see myself going off grid, but yeah. In the meantime, I'm just a slave in the city, just like the rest of my people.
No, I understand. You know, it's estimated it'd only take $1 to $2 billion to harden the grid in the U.S. There's actually a type of a shunt protector device that are actually vacuum tubes. They're big, a type of vacuum tube which will shun off those surges and protect those mega transformers that you're talking about. $1 billion or $2, you know, I mean, that's one stealth bomber. But yeah, but they don't do it.
Yeah, or Congress's prostitution bill. As in the amount they've paid collectively for prostitutes in the 2015 financial year.
Yeah, just what they spend in 1 year on whatever their depravities are.
If you don't supply Congress with coke for 1 year, you can secure the electrical grid. If you cut off their supply of Prozac and Starburst, you can do it. You know, you can feed all the homeless in America with only 1 month of that. You know, it's just the fact that they've got other priorities, bro. You know, prostitution and cocaine. It's a big part of your life as a congressman. I mean, you can't really do business without getting the business done.
Yeah, Jim Mars, I think he uses the term God, referring to guns, oil, and drugs.
Gold, oil, and drugs. But yeah, guns, it works too.
Yeah, but there was that report, Geraldo Rivera, I'm sure you've seen, of filming our troops guarding Afghani poppy fields.
That was reported even in CNN. It's like mainstream news. In fact, I noticed that doing interviews for my documentaries, after we come up with the script and they give me these certain factoids or whatever, like one of them said they've been protecting poppy fields in Afghanistan. And so we go to the internet and Google protecting poppy fields in Afghanistan. And what we found out is that with every single conspiratorial claim that my guests have given me, upon a quick bit of Googling and a little bit of searching keywords on the topic, we find mainstream articles that corroborate it. Mainstream articles on mainstream websites were from mainstream news sources that have very few hits on those particular articles. Tell you the truth. They tell you all the conspiracy stuff, but they don't repeat it 1,000 times a day. No. Let's interrupt this. Justin Bieber got arrested, bro. I mean, dude, this is epic.
This is major.
Justin Bieber, the Biebs, Meister. Is in handcuffs. We have to interrupt this important broadcast about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that will enslave everybody to criminal global corporate government fascism and tell you about the Biebs. We need you to feel something for this guy. He's only like a 14-year-old millionaire brat with more, you know, young underage girls around him than an R. Kelly party, you know. Feel for him, man. Just feel for him.
Understandable. We are actually just about to hear the music, and I want to say thanks again for doing this with us, Vinny. Time flies, man.
The VinnyEastwoodShow.com, everybody.
And I also want to thank you guys for inviting me on. It's been good fun to soak up your airtime with my ego.
Vinny, you also have a band?
Yeah, the Parky Hatchies.
I love the birthday song.
Oh, yeah. If anybody want to search the birthday song, I think if you search Happy Birthday Vinny Eastwood, it should come up with it, actually. It's like, look, I'm going to be really modest here and say that it's the best Happy Birthday song anybody's ever written, okay?
It is.
And I can say that unequivocally because there are zero dislikes on the video on YouTube. And there are zero negative comments about it. So, you know, it's a good happy birthday song. When you're on your birthday, go and listen to it. Happy Birthday, Vinny Eastwood. Search that. Thank you very much.
Do it. This has been Ground Control with Major Tom and Keith AZ. We're going to let you tune in to Dory Bar next. Definitely help donate. Keith, let's say goodnight and tell them to have a good weekend.
Good night, everybody.
That was succinct.
Yes.